Nationally, globally, we are in a crisis point. There is unprecedented disharmony, as you say.
But that doesn't mean that we're actually going to act. Despite the fact that we're being called to act, we just keep hitting the snooze button.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu was asked a question. What do you do in times of despair? And he responded, we show our humanity.
The call is not the call to comfort. The call is the call to action. And that action may make you very, very uncomfortable, very undersettled. And getting to a point where we start recognizing that the resistance is us.
Okay, now I just got emotional.
And the desire to not only change you, but change you in my image.
Okay, now I'm getting triggered.
You know, one person acting alone, acting out of the depth of their own conviction can change the world. But if you stay in that spot, if you stay in the, I'm the one person and I'm going to change the world, you're not. And so
I agree.
I guess my first question is, how do we get our hearts engaged in what we are doing? Okay.
So I love this so much that you went there.
I'm Sharif Abdullah, and to me, belonging means inclusivity, and inclusivity means how we fix all the problems in our planet.
Dr. Sharif Abdullah, such a pleasure to welcome you on this show.
Really good to be here.
You have worked in the field of social, cultural, and spiritual transformation. A proponent of inclusive global human society. You teach groups and individuals how to understand and practice inclusivity, the connection with all beings, which I love. Your writings include so many. My favorite, my ultimate, why you're here, The Power of One, Authentic Leadership in Turbulent Times, such an appropriate book, even though it was written 35 years ago. I have since purchased this book many a time, for different tech leaders. And I want to read the preface. We are in deep trouble. We live in a world that works only for a few. See, I'm going to start crying. As for the rest of us, we live in an insecure world, a world threatened by violence, lack, and spiritual malaise. We live one paycheck, one crop, one relationship away from disaster. However, in the midst of this unprecedented disharmony, we have an opportunity that may not come again for another millennium to craft a society that actually reflects our deepest values. At no other time has it been so clear. Our future is our choice. Wow. Thank you for writing this book.
Well, no, thank you for reading it. This is one of the books that wrote itself.
Yeah.
I woke up one morning and the whole book is sitting there in my head.
For sure.
And I was afraid to sit up because I thought it was going to leak out of my ears. So I keep a pad and pencil near my nightstand. And I start writing out the outline of the book. And I'd number the page and I'd tear it off and when I got to 20 pages, I said, that's pretty much it. And what you've got is pretty much what came out. So I consider it a gift.
So do I. That is for sure.
Yeah.
Let's start at the beginning. One of the things that I love about this book is that you have these highlighted points, these amazing quotes. And you could just read the quotes and you would get the whole book.
That was the idea.
I encourage our audience to really explore this book. I want to start at the beginning with this first quote. A crisis creates the tension point from which we act. We are here. We are here right now, nationally, globally. We are in a crisis point. There is unprecedented disharmony, as you say.
But that doesn't mean that we're actually going to act. Mm. We have all the conditions for us to act. But someone has looked at each one of our mega crises, 9/11, COVID, etc., and said, wow, this is our wake-up call. And we just keep reaching over and hitting the snooze button. And this is a quote from my second book, Creating a World That Works for All, where Václav Havel, the former president of the Czech Republic, provided the introduction to it. And he said, you know, we're well aware of the threats looming over our heads, but we do almost nothing to avert them. You know, so our challenge is, how do we actually act?
Yes.
Despite the fact that we're being called to act and we just keep hitting the snooze button.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu was asked a question. What do you do in times of despair? And he responded with this answer, which I think is so poignant. We show our humanity. Mm-hmm. You say here in your book, the notion that our lives are inextricably linked to each other. Inclusivity is the basis for a world that works for all. And then you say, understanding the problem is not enough. Even articulating a new story is not enough. If we're going to create a world that works for all, we have to take practical steps to manifest our story. Mm-hmm. What are these steps, Sharif?
Well, the first step is to wake up. Mm. I can walk around in the dream state that we call reality and think that I'm creating a world that works for all when I'm really creating a world that works for me and my friends. Mm-hmm. Or I'm creating a world that works for the people I like. And that's not the issue. The issue is, how do you create a world that works for all living beings? All the living beings you like, and then all the living beings that you don't particularly like or don't particularly think about. That becomes the challenge. So the first thing is, if we wake up, look around, and see who is in your field. And second is, what do I do about this? And to recognize that the call is not the call to comfort. The call is the call to action, and that action may make you very, very uncomfortable, very undersettled.
In chapter 2, you talk about old power responses, withdrawal and denial, mm-hmm. operating from limited self-interest or mm-hmm. factionalism. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear more about that. You talk about blaming, making wrong, separation consciousness. Mm-hmm. I added the consciousness piece. Mm-hmm. Creating the enemy, that we have quite a lot of, controlling behavior. In a time of despair, we live in something that is, in organizations we call VUCA. Are you familiar with VUCA? Mm-hmm. Volatility, mm-hmm. uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Controlling is a natural movement into dealing with VUCA. Mm-hmm. And so I ask you a question: how do we live in a world that is so volatile, so complex, so ambiguous, so uncertain? And how do we hold that discomfort without going into a place of control?
I guess I want to approach that in two different directions.
Please.
One is, the VUCA world exists, but it's not as ambiguous as we think it is. So if you go through and look at the assumptions that we've made, mm-hmm. you can start you recognize that all the assumptions create a pattern, and that pattern brings us right to where we're at. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is change the pattern.
You're hitting the nail on the head. When I'm working with, as an executive coach with tech leaders, I often say, In order to shift identity, you have to interrupt a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So now the question becomes, from an individual standpoint, interrupting a pattern requires that self-awareness, that mm-hmm. self-reflection piece that you've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. As a global society, as an organization at large, mm-hmm. how do patterns get interrupted?
Either some deep spiritual force within, or some relatively deep external force comes in. Now, either one can be the thing that shakes us out of our normal
sure.
pattern.
Yeah.
Here in the Bay Area, I always think about the earthquake in, what was that, 89, 90, somewhere in there.
Oh, it was definitely 89.
Yeah. And
you know, remember
when
well.
When the 880 expressway pancaked down on itself.
Yeah.
People in the communities that the expressway cut through, people were climbing into the wreckage.
Right.
While it's still shaking.
Right.
Rescuing people.
Right.
Now, that is not normal in normal human behavior. It's not even normal. It's not a normal American behavior. Okay. But we do that. That's something that human beings do once we get ourselves liberated from I'm going to charge this guy to rescue him. You know, I'm going to act in my deepest self-interest in all situations. It's time that we transcend that and start looking at our deepest collective interest, which may have nothing to do with my self-interest.
You're talking about love. You're talking about compassion. You're talking about a leader that, you even say here, an authentic leader does not deny crisis. In fact, her actions may actually precipitate crisis. You talk about how love and compassion are the authentic leader's primary motivation. How do we, you know, whether it's at a societal level, at a global village level, at an organizational level, how do we make that shift from limited self-interest to the understanding that we are all interconnected? Your book is called The Power of One.
Okay, so someone said this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember who said it. But they said that what you see, your perception, is based on only two things.
Mm.
What you are trained to see, what you expect to see, and nothing else. And so the challenge that you've got is, can you train yourself to see more?
Yeah.
Can you expect to see more? And then you will see that, okay? All of a sudden, this happens in your life, okay? So I'll put the thought in your head of red sports cars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the next couple of days, you're just going to see a whole lot more red sports cars. It's not that they're more red, that there's an omnipotent God somewhere saying, throw more red sports cars into the Bay Area. Somebody just said red sports cars. They're there, but this comes to your awareness.
Right.
The people who smile at you
mm-hmm.
versus the people who frown at you,
mm-hmm.
or the people who are completely indifferent and waiting for your smile, you start seeing that world differently. If I react to people having negative or having what I'm interpreting as negative looks on their faces, I get lost in my traumas because the entire world looks negative to me.
Right.
Once I start recognizing what I'm putting into that world, it happened in the coming out of the hotel today, walk to the elevator, elevator doors open, and this is like a small room. It's a small room full of frowning people. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I smile like, hey, how's everybody doing today? Everybody said, I'm fine. The room could change that quickly.
Right.
Because I inserted me into that room.
It's about influencing the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about having that awareness and that intention to influence the present moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
That is not something I read from your book at this moment.
Great. I'm going to put that into the next one.
However, I will read this from your book because I think it is undeniably powerful. Anger is an expression of powerlessness. People fear that they will lose their identity if they give up their hate and anger. They need to create an enemy so they know they exist. This, when you talk about identity, which you were just talking about, you're talking about setting expectations and understanding what we are both wired to see and expect to see. And you talked about how we are in the midst of a global identity shift. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
We are witnessing this right now. We are witnessing the need to create an enemy as we move through this identity shift so that we know who we are in mm-hmm. this transitional period.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you and I start working together to shift consciousness. Now, what's the first consciousness you need to shift?
Identity.
Well, mine.
Our own identity, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Individual identity.
And we need to shift that together. Okay, so you and I are going to sit down and we're going to meditate. We're going to develop a common okay. identity.
Okay.
And then I'm going to bring into the room some of the people that I work with who don't look like you.
Right.
Don't look like left.
I see.
Don't look like right. They start looking like the people I saw in the elevator today.
Sure.
And we're going to start talking not about various hot button issues.
Let me break this down for our audience. Because our audience is, I would say, I mean, this podcast is geared toward organizations, tech leaders, mm-hmm. you know, across the globe. What you're saying is, look, if we want to shift anything, you have got to start with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have got to focus on your triggers.
Mm-hmm.
You have got to focus on shifting your internal landscape first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
When we have buy-in to have that internal shift, start to transition in whatever capacity,
mm-hmm.
then I can get in a room and find co-partners who also want to shift their mm-hmm. internal landscape. Those are the people in your workshop
mm-hmm.
that you're talking about. But they leave the workshop, they have an epiphany, the guy with the hat,
mm-hmm.
right? And they now have a new state of awareness about themselves. Mm-hmm. That has already shifted the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the baby looks like, mm-hmm. is what you're talking about. And then how do we take that into a broader view of an organization?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get a team to shift? Mm-hmm. Not conform.
Right.
We're not talking about conformity. We already have that.
Yep.
It's ubiquitous.
Yep.
You're talking about getting people curious about who they are to create a world that is from a place of unification,
mm-hmm.
harmony,
mm-hmm.
compassion, empathy, and ultimately, love.
And that we can even begin to get that to that place,
mm-hmm.
I think is a very important understanding.
Yeah.
And to recognize there are people who don't want that to happen.
So now this is becoming very clear to me. You are proposing a vision, a goal. It's a moving target, because
mm-hmm.
that seems to be what life is all about, is these mm-hmm. moving targets constantly. It's a moving target, but if we can get on board as a majority that together, collectively, heading toward that collective moving target, we can then do two things. Create a new world and address the resistance.
Yes, that's exactly right. I have a way of talking like, and without acknowledging, yes, you are absolutely right, okay? And getting to a point where we start recognizing that the resistance is us.
Okay, now I just got emotional.
Okay.
Now I just got emotional because now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Now we're getting somewhere. Okay. And I want our audience to hear that. Say that again, Sharif, please. Well, say it again. The resistance is us.
And the desire to not only change you, but change you in my image.
Okay, now I'm getting triggered. Okay, so now, great. So let's unpack that.
Yeah.
Change you in my image. What does that mean, please?
That means that, okay, let's take the folks in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And I just picked that as an issue, but I could pick any country and any group, you know.
We all could.
The guys in Iran say, well, all women should want to cover their hair.
I see. Okay, yeah.
We're going to keep educating them until they do.
Right.
And we're going to punish them as long as these, there's some ungodly women who want to show their hair. So
now we come back to control.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're coming back to conformity.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're coming back to old traditional ways of leadership that are outdated. And how you think about this in organizations is this top-down command and control state of being, which is fading rapidly.
Mm-hmm. I had an epiphany.
Just now or throughout your life?
Two years ago.
Okay.
While washing dishes, yes.
Okay.
I'm having some now, so I'm going to continue to think about the ones I'm having right now.
Awesome.
But yeah, so I need to tell folks I don't like washing dishes. So I, regardless of what Thich Nhat Hanh said about washing dishes,
I love Thich Nhat Hanh.
I do and did also, but we broke on the dishes part. So I usually have to have something going while I'm washing the dishes. And usually I'm watching a YouTube video on archaeology, or this particular day was on biology. And looking at ant colony biology while washing my dishes. And I learned three things. Thing number one was ants are really, really old. They're among the oldest beings on the planet. They lived at the same time as the dinosaurs. Number two, ants are, by any measure, the most successful beings on the planet. There are 35 pounds of ants for every pound of human on the planet.
That is not a comforting thought in any capacity. Please continue. What is point three? I'd rather go to New Zealand and talk about the sheep. There's okay, four right. sheep to one human. But in any case, what's the third point?
The third point is that ants were born, when they came onto the planet, they were solitary beings. They were not colonies. It was only when they became colony beings that they became the most successful beings on the planet.
That's a great metaphor.
I dried my hands and
metaphor.
I wrote on a piece of paper.
It's a great metaphor.
Colony humans.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if human beings became colony beings?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we would do is act the way that the human beings experiencing the San Francisco earthquake acted back in 89.
Yeah.
We would act selflessly. We would act for the greater good, and we would act without direction and control.
So the themes that I'm hearing from this ant analogy is really moving into a place of understanding how we can cross-functionally collaborate as teams, that we really are focused on building connection, these bridges, you've talked about bridges, building bridges together within organizations and really allowing for a place of connection.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the core of all of that, you know, these ants building colonies, they have to be in relationship with each other, whether they're doing it with their antennas or, you know, mm-hmm. psychically. Mm-hmm. I don't know how ants work, okay? No. But what we need to understand is at the core of every team is the relational aspects of being human. Mm-hmm. Stu Crabb talked about in his interview that there aren't great companies. That brought up a lot of consternation when I've been talking to tech mm-hmm. leaders. Mm-hmm. But there are great teams, that an yeah. organization is made up of great teams. You're mm-hmm. talking about great colonies. Mm-hmm. How do we translate that into organizations? How do we start to allow, as leaders, our organizations to not only just unify cohesively, mm-hmm. to come together and really work so efficiently, but not only efficiently, mm-hmm. relationally? Mm-hmm. Because as we model that relational behavior, Patrick Lencioni talks about that in his book, The Advantage, when we model that relationality, mm-hmm. on a team, that team exemplifies a particular way of being in the mm-hmm. organization. And other teams then look toward that team. You know, Google did such a great job with the Aristotle Project when they interviewed 180 teams and they distilled the values that made certain mm-hmm. teams so effective. Psychological safety was the number one tenet out of five,
mm-hmm. yep.
right? And if you want to learn more, audience, about, you know, of course, psychological safety, Amy Edmondson is the Harvard professor who coined this term, mm-hmm. and her book is called Fearless Organization. How do we build this new world, Sharif, mm-hmm. where we are prioritizing unification, where we are mm-hmm. prioritizing collaboration?
Mm-hmm. Back to where we've been a few times around now.
Yeah.
Is consciousness, is attention, yeah. is once I set my intention
yeah.
that when you and I, when we sit in our meditation
yeah.
and then carry that energy into our work.
I love this.
Okay. That will then start to create a situation where we start acting more as a colony
yeah.
than as these as a group of individuals.
I love this. I think that there are some questions that our leaders can ask themselves immediately to address exactly what you're talking about, which is the following: What do we want to create in this moment? Mm-hmm. What is the intention we want to set as a team? Do we want to create a charter mm-hmm. for our team that sets our codes of conduct, our ways of behaving, are the values that we espouse or want to embody? Who am I as a leader when I'm triggered? Who am I as a leader when I'm not interrupted? I just recently heard that, I think, on TikTok or Instagram, and I loved that. I can't remember who that was that said that, but I definitely want to give credit. Shout out if that's who you are. Who are we now as a team? What's not working, and who do we want to become? Mm-hmm. These are all the things that I'm hearing you talk about mm-hmm. as we envision this new world.
Yeah. Yes and no. Yes, everything on your punch list needs to be there. But if you approach it like, okay, let's sit down and let's go to item number one on the punch list. Do we need a charter? Let's start writing a charter. It locks you up here, okay? And I don't think this colony behavior is up here. I think it's here. I think it's both things. And so
I agree.
My first question is, how do we get our hearts engaged in what we are doing? Okay.
So I love this so much that you went there, and I 1,000,000% agree with you. And not everyone has access to their heart.
Yeah. And
they've still got to start somewhere.
And I think I say this somewhere in the book, you know, one person acting alone, acting out of the depth of their own conviction can change the world. But if you stay in that spot, if you stay in the, I'm the one person and I'm going to change the world, you're not. What you have to do is be that one person. This is what I said about Teddy Roosevelt coming back down San Juan Hill. Everybody's shooting at him, and he's saying to his troops, okay, when I say let's go, this means something. Let's go up the hill, okay? Mm-hmm. And he was not, in the first charge, he was not able to translate his intention into a vision that everybody else shared.
Right.
Everybody else is sitting there saying, where's he going? Mm-hmm. So what we have to do is be able to And I do that this imperfectly. I do this a lot less than perfect. I have to be able to take my vision and take it to people who don't understand it, to people who don't even want to understand it. They don't want to understand it. And have to be able to inspire them to act.
100%. The beautiful polarity, we go back to VUCA, the beautiful polarity of volatility is vision, of uncertainty is understanding, of complexity is clarity, and of ambiguity is agility. So the invitation to everyone who is in the audience listening, watching this conversation, as you build out your future version of your team, yourself, your organization, whatever that is for you, how do you balance? How do you hold the polarity? How do you hold the paradox of all of the VUCA-ness, if you will, with that vision, with that understanding, with that clarity, and with that agility?
Mm-hmm.
And I will just, in closing, ask you one final question. We have spoken so much about this new baby that you are birthing, Sharif, this new vision, this new world. What does that future look like for you?
I can see all the elements now that, you know, my writing is more to the side.
Mm-hmm.
It's how do you get people inspired to act?
I love that.
There's a movement. It's primarily is more visible in Asia, but I think it's going around the world. But it's the do nothing movement. In Japan, it's called lying flat. In China, it's called do nothing. It's young people who are not participating in this society. They're choosing not to buy houses, not to work the standard job, not to do the things that we are, you know, that's expected of you.
Mm-hmm.
They're becoming non-participatory in a toxic society, which is very healthy.
Mm.
The question, though,
it's also revolutionary.
The question is, how do you get them? What is it that they are willing to stand up for?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that they're willing to expend themselves for?
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't focus on the last line of the Declaration of Independence, where the founder said, to this we commit our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that we're willing to commit to?
I love that. And I think that's a great place to end, which is to ask ourselves that question every single day when we wake up.
Yep. And it has to be beyond money. It has to be beyond, I need a bigger car. Right. Or all of the stuff that this society gets us trapped in.
Yeah,
gets us,
for sure.
And it's the thing that when you die, and there are people who don't believe they're going to die. This was really interesting. When you die, you can say, I started this ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the last part of the book, What the Baby Looks Like, is a 1,000-year plan for humanity.
Mm.
It's like, I don't know what's going to be going on 30 years from now, let alone 1,000 years, but I can envision it.
Mm.
And the fact that I envision it makes that part of me.
Mm.
And you can disagree with it. You can say, oh, I don't think we should be doing that. I think we should be doing this. Great. Mm-hmm. Put your ideas in the stream, you know. But that elevates our view past all the muck that we're in right now. And I think that we need to get ourselves out of the muck.
Sharif, it's been such an honor to have this conversation with you. I so appreciate your wisdom, your insights, your challenges, your discourse with me I appreciated the spiciness that we got into yep. and the resistance that we experienced with each yep. other. Thank you. Thank you for showing up so authentically and so intentionally and mindfully.
Yeah. I also want to say thank you mm-hmm. for the opportunity to go in depth on the power of one.
Mm.
You know, 35 years old now and still holding court, you know, it's like, so
amazing.
So yeah, it really is. And the day when I was, you know, scribbling an outline and throwing the pages in the air and numbering them, etc., I guess it still holds water.
It's been an honor and a pleasure to have you. I love this book so much. I absolutely recommend it to so many individuals that I coach. So thank you for putting your thoughts, your heart, and your spirit, and your soul into the world.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
That was Rajkumari Niyogi and Dr. Sharif Abdullah. Up next, a deep look at white supremacy with Jill Nagel. Visit us at podcast.ibelong.com for all the ways to watch and listen to our show. You've been listening to Then, Now, and Tomorrow, an I Belong original series produced by Flowship. Today's episode was executive produced by Rajkumari Niyogi, produced by Mike Giordani, edited by Ramiro Gava, mixed by Alex Roses, original music by Dario Valderrama, production assistance by Tiari Boutte and Pili Melendez. Thank you so much for tuning in.